They were the sweetest things she'd ever tasted. Her entire mouth flooded with juice. Is this what the world was like when there was enough water? Is this what Brendel's people ate on their ships in the sky? Perhaps she should have left more for someone else, but her stomach cried out with hunger. Thinking of her child, she sucked down all but the last fruit and wiped the evidence from her chin. She was instantly overcome with regret. In the Skyre, she would have divided the fruit into portions for herself, Torben, and Gosta, carefully ensuring that each person received a share that matched their needs. But here she was, alone and hoarding food. She told herself it was the baby, but she knew she was partially lying. The farther she got from the Skyre, and the more she followed Phasma's orders, the less sure she felt about who she truly was. That night was a longer one than most. The adrenaline from the arena fight still sang in her blood, and thanks to her earlier nap, she barely slept. She used the time to pull out her leather bag of herbs and craft a new pot of oracle salve, as the old tin was running low. The sun here was more punishing than it had been back home, and they were using 3 times as much of the balm, yet their skin continued to redden, even under their masks. The complicated process was challenging, especially in the low light of a lantern they'd brought from Aratu, and by the time she was done, she was exhausted. The argument she'd overheard between Brendel and Phasma replayed in her head as she snuggled up with Gosta, reminding her that the world was, in many ways, turned upside down. There was hope now, but there was also a new sense of dread. Every time she looked up from Gosta's shoulder, she saw Phasma's silhouette, a lonely figure keeping watch on the sand. Whatever Phasma was waiting for didn't happen that night, and the next morning they divided up the remaining Aratu food and began the next leg of their journey. Siv couldn't find a way to prevent the group from splitting up as Brendel and Phasma had arranged. The way Brendel suggested that Gosta ride alone sounded downright gallant, and the girl was pleased and relieved to have the space to herself.
"Wouldn't you like to stay with me, though?" Siv asked.
"I mean, it would be nice to have some room."
Gosta looked down, blushing, unaccustomed to arguing with her elders.
"My ankle is feeling better, but it can get cramped."
So the girl stretched out in the back of her own gav, driven by a trooper, while Siv found herself pressed up against Torben. Part of her was grateful for his reassuring bulk and easy company, but she just couldn't relax as she watched Gosta's hair bounce in the front of the vehicle, knowing that any traps or attacks from the front would claim the girl first, as the hidden pit before Aratu had. But then she realized that she and Torben were in back, the very direction from which Phasma was expecting trouble. Phasma and Brendel's gav was neatly placed in the center, and while this fact would have escaped Siv just a few days earlier, now she had seen a brief slice of the machinations that happened in secret between Phasma and Brendel. And she didn't like them. Life in the Skyre had prepared Siv well for this sort of journey. Very little occurred, but she was always wary, waiting for an attack or natural disaster. The motion of the vehicle had once exacerbated her nausea, but now it lulled her into a strange, light sleep, and she could feel the sun pressing against her eyelids as her body jigged with every slip of sand. Torben was a pleasant companion, happy enough to be quiet or chat, his arm keeping Siv upright and feeling safe. The trooper in front, Huff, was a study in silence. Siv often forgot he was there, much less that somewhere under that helmet and armor was a human being with a history, thoughts, and dreams. When they stopped for a brief lunch and to relieve themselves, she found herself curious about the man.
"Where are you from, Huff?"
she asked. He had his helmet off and was picking at some dried meat taken from the lizard attack while sipping his water. He had pale skin that seemed as if it had never seen the sun before, and the longer he stood out under the burning rays, the pinker and sweatier he looked. Siv had offered him some oracle salve, but he made a disgusted face and waved it away. Although he appeared to be in his early 20s, judging by how folk aged in the Skyre, his buff hair was already going thin. His eyes were a light gray that verged on white, and he frowned as soon as she spoke to him.
"Where am I from?" "The First Order,"
he said, as if she were a fool. Siv noticed that his accent was different from Brendel's, something closer to her own, maybe.
Is it a planet?
He shook his head.
Hard to say what it is. The government that should be. It's the right side to be on, I'll tell you that.
But were you not born on a planet? Huff shrugged.
I was in an orphanage somewhere when I was little. Don't even remember where. Doesn't matter. It wasn't good. The First Order is my real home now. A ship called the Finalizer. When I came on as a kid, I'd never seen a place so big. You could walk all day long and never see everything. There are thousands of people on there I've never even met.
He looked around the empty desert.
Opposite of this, really. The food isn't much, but I miss it. This meat tastes rotten.
He threw a strip of jerky down on the ground, and without thinking about it, Siv knelt to snatch it up and dust off the sand. She gave him a reproachful look.
Food is not to be wasted here. Can you not see how very rare it is?
The First Order will pick us up, and then it won't matter. Until General Hux orders me to be thrifty, I'll go on as I always have.
As she cleaned the jerky off with her fingers and stuffed it in her mouth, she tasted it. The rot. Nothing lasted long enough in the Skyre to begin to turn, but she instinctively wanted to spit it out. Still, food was food, and her teaching ran deeper than her distaste. She swallowed it down quickly and followed it with a tiny sip of water from one of the Aratu skins. When she stood to ask Huff if he liked the First Order, he was already walking away. Not that it mattered. They were closer to their destination than to their old home, and there was no going back. They were soon loaded into their vehicles and plowing toward where Phasma swore Brendel's ship would be. For hours and hours, there was nothing. No lumps, no animals, no walls. Nothing but rippled gray dunes of sparkling sand and the sun beating down, making Siv sleepy and woozy and wishing she hadn't eaten that strip of rotten jerky. The taste plagued her, and no matter how much she swallowed water or nibbled on salty sea veg, it wouldn't go away. Torben dozed beside her, one huge paw always on his club. His long, wavy hair billowed prettily in the breeze in a way that he wouldn't have been able to appreciate if she'd taken the trouble to explain it. He was a practical man, and beauty didn't last on Parnassus. Siv grew bored and restless, her glance lazily switching from the lead vehicle in which Gosta slumbered to the middle one that Brendel drove, hunched over the steering wheel while Phasma sat up in the turret, her hand on the gun and her helmet constantly turned to watch the sand behind them. Siv told me that she felt something strange in the air then, as if the desert were holding its breath, waiting. Everything wavered in the haze with the sun at its highest, white and punishing. Her eyes hurt from staring at the sparkling gray, and each time the sun caught on a bit of metal, it flashed hot enough to leave red spots dancing in her field of vision. The drive became endless, and for the first time, Siv worried that they might not make it to Brendel's ship. How could these vehicles keep going? What fuel powered them? How long would their water, salve, and food last until they started eyeing the weakest of their companions? Or, to be more honest, how long until Gosta suffered an unfortunate and unavoidable accident and Brendel Hux merely shrugged as he urged Siv to use her detraxers?
There's something ahead!
The shout woke Siv from her uncomfortable, half-asleep musing, and she went on alert, one hand on her blade. Even though she'd been carrying the blaster, it was the scythe she'd inherited from her mother that fit her hands best and sang of home. Torben likewise tightened to alertness beside her, shaking his head and muttering,
"Yes, but what kind of something? That's the bit that matters."
Scanning the sands before them, Siv saw two things. The first was a strange fence made of metal wire stretching forever in either direction. The second was a figure glittering so bright that it burned her eyes to look at it. Without a word, the lead Gav changed its direction, aiming for the figure. Siv couldn't tell from so far back whether it was a structure, a droid, a machine, or something different. Another mystery seen only from far off involved white placards placed at equal distances along the fence, flapping against the metal and making an eerie, toneless song as they were buffeted by the wind. Any writing that had been there had long ago been scoured away. The fence went on and on, rising stark against the bright blue sky, and they didn't slow as they approached. When they were almost within blaster rifle range of the bright thing, the first Gav skidded to a halt. Brendel and Phasma's vehicle drew even with it and stopped, as did Civ's. All in a row, engines growling, they stared at the puzzling figure. Phasma pulled out her quadnox, considered the scene, and handed them down to Brendel. He too looked a long time, and when the nox dropped, he was frowning, his whole face bright red and dripping with sweat.
"What is it?"
he asked Phasma. She shook her head. "Nothing I've ever seen before."
"The way the sun reflects off it,"
Torben said.
"It burns my eyes."
The two leaders hopped down from their vehicle, and Phasma gestured to her warriors to join her, while Brendel consulted with his troopers. Even with the quadnox, Civ couldn't tell what the bright thing might be, and she had the sharpest sight among the Skyr folk. Gosta sidled up to Civ and tried the quadnox herself.
"Strange,"
she muttered.
"It's too lumpy for a machine, but too shiny for a living thing."
Brendel put a hand on Gosta's shoulder.
"You're still injured. You stay here and guard the Gavs. Everyone else have your weapons ready."
He pulled his own blaster and fiddled with the switches on the side.
"This is not normal." "Well, what is these days?"
Torben said, hefting his clubs and axe. The troopers went first, blaster rifles up and ready, their boots slipping through the sand. Phasma came next, Civ and Torben flanking her. Brendel came last, his blaster shaking in his hand as sweat dripped down his forehead in a way that Civ found nearly blasphemous when she glanced back. Gosta clearly hated staying behind, but she held her blaster and took her place in the back of her vehicle as the others crept up the hill. Defying Brendel had somehow become as ridiculous a thought as defying Phasma. The whole thing seemed silly to Civ. If the mysterious object was a machine, it either was deactivated or had been tracking them all along. If it was an animal, it was stupid or slow, as it hadn't budged. She couldn't think of anything else that could pose a real threat, and yet Brendel commanded them to sneak up on it? Still, her leader was following his orders, and so she would follow Phasma. Closer and closer they crept in plain sight, every blaster aimed, every bit of metal reflecting in the sun, and still the glittering thing didn't make any move whatsoever. Soon Civ could make out the true shape of it, and it reminded her of a statue she'd seen in Aratu. A piece of claywork, vaguely in human form, apparently representing some much-loved Aratu of time past. This shape was lumpy like that, and yet the material wasn't anything she'd seen before.
"It's not your ship,"
Phasma whispered to Brendel.
"You said it would shine."
"Not like this."
They were close enough to poke it with a spear, when two silver eyes blinked open amid the mirror-like gold, each one the size of Civ's fist, and segmented like an insect's.
"Ah, greetings, travelers. Chirk has been waiting for you."
"Let's kill it,"
Torben whispered.
"I don't like it."
Brendel holstered his blaster, held up his hands in a calming sort of way, and stepped forward.
"You are a Gand, are you not?"
"Chirk is a Gand you speak with, yes. Chirk is the last guardian of the Deadlands."
Torben gestured to the infinite sea of gray sand behind them.
"You mean there are lands deader than that?"
Chirk buzzed a laugh, and as its head shifted, Civ finally understood the glittering metal appearance. The Gand, if that's what a Gand was completely covered with the same kind of golden beetle that had been responsible for killing Carr. As it laughed, beetles darted from around its eyes and down to where its chin would be, if a giant insect had a chin. The beard of beetles shifted and clicked, making Civ shudder in horror. The Gand's face, revealed, was no less horrifying. A chitinous bag with alien eyes and an apparatus that looked nothing like a mouth, even if that's where the buzzing, clacking voice was coming from. "Those beetles," Civ said, pointing. "Why do they not kill you?"
The Beatles are the closest thing Chirk has to family. It is lonely in the wastelands, is it not? Pleasant to have beings with which to converse.
They can talk?
Torben asked. Another buzzing laugh.
There is little to discuss. It has been many years since sentient beings have approached the border of the Deadlands. Chirk has been inactive for a long period of time. It is good for Chirk to have work again. If you are ready, Chirk will deliver a message.
Brendel had been in conversation with his troopers, but now he stepped forward.
You have a message for us. From whom?
The question would be from what? Now that the signs have been scoured away by sand and wind, Chirk is the only warning. Do not enter the Deadlands. There was a great accident and the radiation remains. Those who pass this border will die within the week. No one enters. No one leaves. It is an elegant arrangement, but lonely. Perhaps Chirk is being punished.
Punished for what? Siv asked. She had never spoken to an alien before. For all the times she'd fought against the Claws, she'd never conversed with Balder or learned anything of his story. Part of her was awed by her fearlessness now.
The Gand should not leave Gand. It is not the way. But Chirk was young, and the augury was clear. Chirk had to depart. Chirk has long expected the other Finesmen to hunt Chirk down for leaving the sect, but every ship is shot down long before Chirk can be found.
The Gand laughed again, and Siv felt certain she heard more than a little madness as the beetles hurriedly bustled around Chirk's face and resettled.
It is amusing, is it not, to want to be both found and forgotten at the same time?
You said radiation.
Brendel stepped closer, throwing Siv a warning glance.
And an accident. When was it?
Chirk does not know. Time passes strangely here. Chirk watched the latest star fall into the wastes, and although there is no gaseous mist here to show the right signs, the beetles talked to Chirk. They said people would come and horrible things would happen. Chirk has been very anxious for this eventuality to occur.
Horrible things?
Phasma repeated sharply. Chirk laughed its unsettling laugh again. Siv couldn't tell if it was male or female, if it even had a gender. She couldn't tell if the Gand was old or young. All she knew was that it was sitting on something as tall as she was, making the Gand appear larger than it actually was. Up close, watching the beetles undulate, she saw that Chirk sat cross-legged, hands on its knees. It didn't seem to have any weapons, but it was covered with beetles, wasn't it? One flick of a finger and a single insect could kill their entire party. And if the Gand could direct the insects, speak to them somehow? Well, Siv resolved not to make Chirk angry.
Horrible things will happen either way, if that makes you more comfortable with your fate. Chirk is only here to warn you. Beyond this fence you have perhaps 4 days before the sickness will be in your bones. Chirk knows that there are medicines elsewhere that can easily cure such diseases, but Chirk doubts that such succor can be found beyond this fence.
Brendel leaned toward Phasma, and Siv was close enough to hear their whispered conversation.
He's talking about radiation poisoning. That suggests there was either a nuclear weapon used here, or an accident at a factory that made such weapons.
Did the map not name the Karnstar facilities, General Hux? Perhaps there is a weapon, but perhaps there is also a facility that will have the medicines to cure the disease it causes.
Brendel exhaled and scratched at his beard.
If we can get to my ship, the First Order will be here within hours. Our ships are equipped with med bays and cures for every known disease in the galaxy. It's merely a game of numbers and time. I say we thank this freak for his time and keep moving.
You're not concerned about the sickness? or the augury?
A snort. I don't believe in magic, Phasma. And even if I did, I wouldn't take my fortune from a mad Gand alone in the desert. They are a strange people to begin with. I am confident the First Order can halt the sickness should his warning concern an actual radioactive event. Phasma paused in that way of hers when she was thinking through every strategy to its many possible ends. Siv well knew that Phasma's brain was like a spiderweb and that she would not make a decision until she'd considered every thread and its every connection. Holding up the quadnox, Phasma looked through the fence to the sands beyond, then turned to regard the path behind. It was clear that no matter what challenges lay ahead, going back was not an option.
"Then let's hurry,"
she finally said. Brendel nodded and turned back to the Gand, who hadn't moved. Siv couldn't even see it breathing and wondered what Chirk was made of, if it even had the usual organs and fluids that her detractors would make such quick work of.
"Thank you for your warning, Chirk. We understand that this area is dangerous, but we have no choice but to continue in pursuit of our goal. Do you have any knowledge of the terrain or creatures that lie beyond the fence?"
Chirk's great head wagged, sending the beetles scurrying.
"You will go on as the augury said you would, and what will find you will find you. Chirk knows what you will do, great general, and Chirk knows that you will reach your goal. The galaxy will take its toll one day. Sometimes it is better to let a thing alone."
"But none have passed recently."
"Not in years. Decades."
"And if anyone else tries, you will give them this same warning."
"You do not control Chirk, and Chirk will say what the sands command. Chirk will tell whoever comes what they need to know. Chirk will tell them that only danger and death wait beyond this fence, the same thing that you now know for all the good it did. Wisdom is wasted on zealots. That is one thing Chirk is sure of."
"So we may pass." Chirk held up a beetle-covered arm, gesturing with a brown, three-fingered hand.
"You will find a hole in the fence if you walk that way."
Siv darted forward, leaving a bit of dried meat near Chirk's seat, but not close enough for a beetle to touch her.
"Thank you, Chirk," she murmured, bowing her head.
Her mother had taught her long ago that there was some wisdom in madness, and that those who spoke with the beyond were to be respected and rewarded.
"When the time comes, keep walking,"
Chirk whispered, soft as an insect's buzz. Siv nodded and turned back to her people, but her heart sank the moment she looked over her shoulder toward Gosta and their vehicles.
"Hurry!"
she shouted.
"They're here!"
'26. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. A group of masked warriors ran toward them, pulling something that resembled the sleds of the skimmers who had once attacked them. Siv couldn't pick out anyone else in the throng, but she knew the figure being pulled on the sled as well as she knew anything.
"It's Keldo."
Phasma had her quadnox up, and she had an even better view.
"Keldo, all of the Skaya, and all of the claws. This is madness."
"Looks more like revenge," Brendel muttered.
The group was coming on quickly, sliding down the dune toward their vehicles, where Gosta was just exiting her gav and looking back for the source of the noise. She must have seen them too, as she spun back around and ran as fast as she could toward the fence, hampered by her turned ankle. Siv took a few steps forward to help the girl, but Phasma caught her wrist, the hard glove of the trooper uniform digging into Siv's flesh.
"You can't save her. We must keep going."
Behind them, Brendel shouted,
"They can't be allowed to take the vehicles! Fire!"
The troopers put their blaster rifles to their shoulders, and they pelted the vehicles and the oncoming attackers with red-hot laser fire. The first gav went up in a ball of flame that caught the second, and the third lost a wheel and listed sadly to the side.
"Phasma! Help!"
Gosta called, her arms outstretched toward the warrior she'd idolized. But Phasma merely shook her head, her stormtrooper helmet a flat, white mask. Siv tried to pull away, but Phasma's grip tightened.
"She's one of us," Siv begged.
"She's too weak to go on."
Then we'll carry her. Keldo's warriors had almost reached Gosta, and the troopers focused their blasters on the crowd. Smoke filled the air, providing a hazy backdrop for exploding clouds of sand and blood-red lasers. Siv yanked and pulled, but Phasma wouldn't release her. She couldn't watch as the laser fire rocked into the mob of people she'd known all her life, as bodies cried out and screamed and fell. So she put her head down against the armor on Phasma's shoulder, a strangely personal gesture that Phasma allowed. When Phasma pushed her away, Siv turned around. Behind what was left of the mob, Gosta lay on the ground among a dozen other bodies. The girl wasn't moving, her eyes open to the sky. Little Gosta, the sweetest and most idealistic of the Skyr warriors, was dead.
No!
Phasma still had Siv's wrist, as if correctly guessing that Siv would be compelled to run toward the younger girl. Not only because there might be some hope of saving her, but also because to die alone without helping her people would leave Gosta's spirit uneasy and Siv's responsibility undone. Siv's fingers itched for the detractors in her pack, for the calm she felt when she completed her holy rite, and her arms ached to hold the girl close and tell her she had been a good and brave companion, a worthy warrior of the Skyr. But Phasma was tugging Siv away toward the rent in the fence, and soon Torben joined in, pulling Siv unwillingly along, murmuring apologies and kindnesses that did nothing to soften the blow of her loss. All those bodies, or at least many of them, had received the gift of the Detraxers, proudly wearing green stripes of the Oracle Salve, and now they would never contribute their own proper shares. When she'd chosen to side with Phasma and lead the Skyr on this quest, Siv had known she was abandoning her people, denying them the protective bomb they needed to survive and stay healthy. She'd planned to return before they began to suffer, to help them build a new life in the stars with better medicines than anything she could provide. Now her people were dying. Guilt rested heavy on her shoulders, and it felt like a thirst that could never be slaked. Siv's feet moved in the sand as if it were quicksand. She ventured a last look back at Chirk, where the Gand lay dead, toppled on the ground and leaking a fluid that wasn't blood. The beetles that had bedecked him ignored his moisture, leaving his face and body to feast instead upon the destruction rendered by the blaster fire. Underneath the beetles, the insectoid alien had worn the blood-red robes of the Aratu, his segmented feet bare and his three-fingered hands open to the sky. Siv looked to Brendel, his blaster still in his hand, but there was no way to know if the strange guardian's death had been collateral damage or a purposeful execution. Torben and Phasma dragged Siv away for real now, each grasping the top of one of her arms. Her detractors weighed heavy on her back to see so many nutrients lost. When the shimmering gold beetles boiled up out of the sand to cover Gosta, Siv finally turned away, shaking her arms loose, and found her legs again. The last thing she saw was the crowd of Skyr and Claws, those who hadn't been hit by blaster fire and claimed by beetles, running across the sand, war cries erupting from their masks as they pulled Keldo's sled behind them. She had shared his bed, but never seen his mask before, and from this distance she couldn't tell what might have inspired it. Harsh slashes of black, white, and red were surrounded by a mane of black feathers. The sight was enough to get her running. They jogged parallel to the high fence, passing sign after wind-scoured sign, until they came to a rip in the metal wires. One of the troopers held it back while everyone crawled through, and Torben was nearly too big to fit. Siv was worried the loose wires would cut him and call forth the beetles, but Phasma silently shoved him aside and dug a deep furrow in the sand to make more room. Once they were all through, Brendel held the two pieces of fence together and slapped some sort of binder around the wire, holding it tight.
"It won't last long," he said, echoing Siv's thoughts, "but it will slow them down."
Once inside the fence, nothing seemed different from the other side. The sand was still gray, the sun still beat down, and the air didn't feel any more dangerous than it had before they'd crossed the border, as Chirk had called it. But Siv shivered anyway, sure to her bones that something was desperately wrong here. The words the Gand and Brendel Hux had exchanged, weapon, radioactive, nuclear, were on repeat in her mind as she probed the environment for some new sensation that would inform her of what to fear. Phasma guided them in the direction of Brendel's ship, and as Siv had never doubted her leader's unerring navigation, she didn't doubt it now. She took her place, after Phasma and before Torben, running easily and deeply feeling the empty spots in their formation that should have been taken by eager Gosta and cheerful Carr. They had left their land as 5 warriors, and even if the Deadlands didn't live up to their threat, they would only ever be 3. 4, maybe, if Brendel's medicine was as good as he promised it was, and the child could survive whatever poison had destroyed this place. They went down a long dune, and the land flattened out a little, as it had here and there throughout their travels. Judging by the discs she'd seen at Terpsichore Station, Siv thought this meant that long ago these areas had been naturally lower, true valleys and craters that had once held water and plants. At first there was no sign of any such topography, but as they went on, strange shapes and shadows began to appear in the monochrome gray. They began to pass tall posts, each leaning sideways like a broken finger reaching from the ground. Farther on, a peculiar skeleton of metal rose proudly from the sand, looping and whirling like the spine of the giant eels that washed up on the rocks sometimes at home. "Were they animals?" she asked. Brendel had fallen behind, slowing them all with his lack of physical conditioning, and he held his side and wheezed as he spoke.
"Amusements," he said. "They once guided vehicles that people rode for fun. An archaic form of entertainment on planets without enough technology to stimulate the populace from inside their own homes. This planet had much land and little sense."
As they went on, forced by Brendel's reduced speed to slow from a jog to a fast walk, Phasma moved to the rear. She couldn't walk more than a few moments without spinning to scan the horizon behind them. Keldo and his people hadn't shown themselves yet, but they'd be following. In such an empty, deserted place, and with the beetles and who knew what other horrors hiding under the sand, there was nowhere to hide. Dusk fell, and they hurried toward a series of bleached white structures poking up from the sand like shattered teeth. Although their walls seemed sound, there were no roofs to the buildings, and sand filled them inside, dusted high into the corners.
"Homes," Brendel said before Siv could ask, "and we'd best shelter in one tonight. We can't go much farther without rest. If the other group has been on foot this whole time, they'll be no better off."
Siv knew well enough that Brendel's "we" actually referred only to himself. The Skyr warriors were more than capable of walking for several more hours, and the troopers were in excellent physical condition. But Brendel wasn't made for Parnassos. When he pulled down his goggles and fabric wraps to rub sweat from his forehead, his reddened face was bleached white around the edges. There were deep purple hollows under his eyes, and his muscles quivered. His hand hadn't left the stitch in his side, and he stumbled every few steps, although there was nothing to impede his footwork. He must have recognized how dire his situation was, as he allowed Siv to swipe thick lines of salve across his cheeks.
"There!"
Phasma pointed to the last structure in the grouping, which sat a little higher and had part of what had once been a roof.
PT-2445 will take first watch," Brendel said. "We'll switch every 2 hours. After the third watch, we'll keep going."
Casting nervous looks at the sand behind them, they walked through the empty doorway and spread out around the building, which was divided into many rooms, all filled with sand. Although it was clear the rooms had once been tall enough even for someone of Phasma's stature, the sand had filled the structure so that its walls were just tall enough to provide a decent backrest for Torben, with perhaps a meter of space until jagged metal support beams poked out of the uniform white. Siv went to a corner, sitting down hard and pawing through her bags for the reassuring touch of her detractors. It was her duty to make sure everyone had a last application of Oracle's salve before sleep claimed them, and the ritual of the task calmed her. Torben sat down beside her, and she gently drew lines of salve on his cheeks and forehead. They were near Brendel's ship, and whatever hidden dangers lurked in the Deadlands, she longed to protect him.
"Thank you," he murmured.
"Body to body, dust to dust," she replied. Her mother had explained that it was part of a far older ritual, but the ceremonial words always made her feel tied to the planet and to her own lineage, for all that her mother was the only relation she remembered. When she offered the tin of salve to Brendel and his troopers, she received brief thanks from Pete and Huff, both out of their helmets, but Brendel only nodded, which would have been a rudeness worth fighting over back home in the Skyre. As she approached Phasma, Siv realized that she would never again smear the lines on Gosta's cheeks, fussing over the girl and reminding her to drink enough water. Phasma was the only one sitting outside the building, her back to what would have been the outer wall. She still wore her helmet, and Siv's curiosity about the impact of Randorus's beating continued unabated. When she held out the tin to Phasma, Phasma took off her gloves, scooped out her portion, and paused for a moment, as if she'd forgotten what to say. When her words came, they were clipped and atonal, the very mimic of Brendel, if he'd been polite enough to say them.
Thank you.
Siv bowed her head slightly. Body to body, dust to dust. She stayed standing, though, hoping Phasma would say something, or take off her helmet, or do anything that would provide comfort or understanding. Back in the Skyre, Keldo had been the voice and heart of their leadership, the one who always knew what to say, whether it involved offering kindness, support, company, or admonishment. Back then, Phasma's quiet had seemed like one half of a whole, as if her part of their sibling bond was the realm of the physical, of protection and defense and valor. Now, without Keldo's tenderness and empathy to ground her, Phasma seemed cold and inhuman. The helmet only served to heighten her resemblance to a droid, like the ones back in Terpsichore Station, which had never changed their expression, even as they did horrible things. And yet the way Phasma focused on the sand, it was clear she felt something. "You can take extra," Siv said, almost without thinking, as she weighed the tin in her hand. It was Gosta's portion for the day, and years of carefully monitoring her people's needs had trained Siv to mete out exactly what was required and hold back enough for all. Now it only served to remind her that Gosta had been little more than a child, for all that she'd sought to belong among the warriors and acquitted herself well in battle.
"Save it. Perhaps it will keep us going tomorrow."
Phasma's voice was flat and clipped, and Siv could tell, even with the helmet, that Phasma wasn't watching her.
"The sickness that Chirk mentioned. Do you feel it?"
Phasma's helmet shook once.
"No."
"I wonder if we'll even know. If it will come on like the fever, hot and itching. Or if it will sneak up in the night like the old barking cough once did. Or perhaps he was merely mad."
"Perhaps."
Siv waited several long minutes, hoping Phasma would say something, anything, to reassure her that her leader had not, in fact, begun to head in the direction of madness herself. The longer Phasma sat there, scanning the horizon, holding her portion of salve while not removing her helmet to apply it, doing and saying nothing, her hand on her blaster, the further she felt from the girl Siv had grown up with and learned to trust with her life. Siv tried one last gambit.
"Do you think we'll make it?"
At that, finally, the helmet turned toward her and canted up. She felt Phasma's keen gaze crawling over her and wondered what her leader saw in her lieutenant.
"Perhaps."
Siv turned to leave, but she couldn't go until she'd had her say. Even if it was like prying sea creatures from their shells, she would know something of Phasma's mind as they entered a place that truly terrified her.
"Brendel Hux says we can make it. He says his ship will be there and his people will come. He says they'll take us into the stars and give us medicine, that they can fix whatever is harmed here. Do you think it's true?"
Phasma's helmet clicked as her gaze left Siv and returned to the gray horizon, the setting sun casting long, black shadows from the metal bones of long-dead civilizations.
"We can only act as if it's true. We can only keep going."
Siv nodded and walked away, considering. Phasma was right. At this point, there was nothing else to be done. They could only press forward, believing that Brendel Hux would be their savior. If he was lying, they would be dead soon enough anyway. Siv woke, covered by Torben's huge arm and a dusting of sand. Every crevice of her body itched, tortured by the feathery gray stuff, and she flung it off and stood, trying to find her balance. The grit stung her eyes, and she brushed it from her eyelashes as she faced the direction from which they were being pursued. She didn't see Keldo and his band, but she had no doubt there was little time to waste. Phasma was already awake, in conversation with Brendel. Siv's brow wrinkled, and she put on her own mask again. It irked her that she had to work so hard to get a few meaningless words out of her leader, while Phasma seemed more than happy to converse with Brendel in secret. In her opinion, Phasma should have been loyal to her people first, and her allies second. Phasma apparently did not see it the same way anymore. "Get up, you big brute." Siv rubbed Torben's shoulder, smiling as he twitched awake and frowned at the sand covering him as if he were a great mountain.
"I'm buried," he said in surprise. "Another hour and you'd have lost me."
"Hardly. You're the biggest lump in view." It made her feel good, tending to Torben, giving him bits of food and his morning share of water and spreading him with extra salve. With Gosta gone, she ached to take care of someone, to make some kind of nurturing connection. As for Torben, he put up with her clucking and pulled her into a hug, and it felt so good to be held that she felt her eyes prick with tears as she slipped off her mask and buried her face in his chest, a stolen moment of comfort that felt all the more precious in such a precarious situation. If the Gand had told the truth, they were headed toward the deadliest place on Parnassos, and that was saying a lot. Every other enemy Siv had faced was something that could be fought head-on, opposing groups, sea beasts, even a monster like Randorus. But whatever creeping death awaited them was some sort of disease with unknown symptoms that could already be taking over her body somewhere deep inside. When the child wiggled within her, barely a burble of bubbles, she put a hand to her belly and offered up thanks. At least what she held most precious was still untouched. So far. They set out before the sun had truly breached the sky, and Brendel grumbled that they should be walking at night when the air was cool and clear, rather than saving their work for the heat of the day. Siv expected Phasma to share her own thoughts on the matter, but she remained silent. In the Skyre, Phasma would have had a sharp reprimand for any warrior in her company who complained or questioned her judgment, and there would have been punishment for anyone who slowed the entire party down with their lack of vigor and energy. Yet Phasma matched their pace to Brendel's without a word, subtly resetting their path every time they started to veer off. Siv was too well trained by now to question this strange and silent battle of wills. Her sole task was to get to Brendel's ship alive, preserving her child and Torben as well as she could. Even if she had her doubts, Phasma was her leader, and Siv was duty-bound to follow her orders, even when she felt conflicted by Brendel's interference. They left the long, empty buildings, and new shapes rose up against the morning sky. These weren't small homes like those filling the last area. They were huge stations, as big as Terpsichore or Aratu, but ravaged. The first one was missing part of its metal roof, with black shadows ghosting up its white walls. The farther they walked, the more damaged the buildings appeared. Their roofs were gone. Their walls burned and cracked and missing great chunks. Siv felt woozy as she looked around and tried to imagine what could do so much damage to such a large area. Even the mighty ocean took years to chip away at the stone cliffs of the Skyre. After they stopped to take care of personal needs behind a particularly mangled structure, Siv noticed several black shadows shaped like people painted on the wall. "What is that? More art?" she asked Brendel, who was waiting nearby in the shade of a wall, his goggles and wraps undone as he scratched at his eyes. He turned to follow her glance.
"Residue from a nuclear blast," he said, brow furrowed and mouth pursed. "We must be near the epicenter."
"Residue?"
"Oh, look. People were standing in front of the wall when the bomb hit. Everything exploded, and the power of the blast disintegrated them where they stood.
Their remains were sort of pressed into the wall by the power of the explosion. Do you see?
No. I don't know what an explosion is.
Everyone except Torben had gathered around now to listen, and Brendel put his hands on his hips and considered them. He'd put his black outfit back on sometime after Aratu, and the color was being leached out by the sun, the careful pleats and folds and puffs dusted with gray sand and wrinkled. The once shiny black boots were dull and cracked. His beard had grown out to a patchy red and white scruff, and his face was flushed an unhealthy red, with a few developing spots like the ones Siv had suffered during her teen years.
"Look, it's very complicated," Brendel said. "But you know what lightning is?"
Siv nodded.
"Of course."
"Imagine a huge bolt of lightning, so big and with so much power that it destroys everything as far as the eye can see. Every person, every animal, every plant, every building. Only the very strongest surfaces made of the most resilient minerals might survive it. Organic matter is disintegrated, utterly destroyed, and leaving nothing behind. The entire sky goes black with smoke, blocking the sun and turning the rain to poison. Literally nothing survives."
"I can't imagine that,"
Siv said, but her voice was hollow. She couldn't imagine it, but she could understand it. Brendel's description explained so much about Parnassus, about why there was nothing left. She'd always been told that the planet itself had been the cause of her people's destruction, but this made more sense. Of course it was people. People had destroyed this place, and people had left behind the few survivors to piece together a violent life filled with pain and toil. Torben had rejoined them and heard the last bit, his face flushed red with fury as if he would gladly drag the person responsible out of whatever hole they were hiding in and beat them to death. He put his arm around Siv as if wishing he could protect her and the child from all the sorrows Parnassus had inflicted.
"Who did this?"
Phasma asked. Brendel chuckled.
"Isn't it obvious? The Konstar Mining Corporation. Whether they were responsible for the bombing, whether a rival corporation accomplished it, or whether their faulty technology triggered a nuclear meltdown, it was clearly them. And instead of fixing their mess, they abandoned the entire planet."
"Do they still do business in your world?"
"They are a large and profitable business in the galaxy, yes."
"Something should be done."
Brendel nodded, looking crafty.
"Perhaps that can be arranged. They own many valuable assets, and the First Order always needs more assets."
Siv felt that Phasma and Brendel had just reached an unspoken arrangement, that they had some prior understanding of how their paths would, well, not intersect. Probably not intertwine either, as Phasma didn't seem to particularly like him. Align was probably the better word. Brendel had something in mind for Phasma to do, some special place among his people that would benefit him. Brendel was the first to walk on, turning from the imprinted shadows as if he'd finished looking at a particularly boring rock. The troopers followed him, as did Phasma, who quickly outpaced him to lead. Siv and Torben lingered a moment, and he pulled her more tightly to his side. The black shadows appeared to be two different sizes, and Siv imagined she saw adults and children there, an entire family group reduced to nothing but a hazy image on a wall.
"The faster we walk, the faster we'll find safety," Torben reminded her.
She turned in his arms to look up into his unmasked face and immediately put the back of her hand to his forehead.
"Do you feel feverish?" she asked.
For though his anger had fled, his color remained high. A few tiny spots lurked under his scruffy brown beard, and his eyes were bright green against pink whites. His skin was cool against hers, though, and when she put her fingertips to his pulse, his heart was beating steady and strong.
"I feel fine," he said, eyebrows drawing down in confusion. "And you?"
She put her hand to her own cheek. Her skin, too, felt cool, but her fingers danced over a few bumps at her temples, where her hair pulled back from her scalp.
"Chirk said there would be a sickness," she said. "I wonder if this is how it starts."
Torben gently pulled her mask into place and urged her to walk as the others disappeared around the next building.
"We'll ask Brendel later,"
he said, giving her a squeeze.
"Nothing to be done for it now. I feel strong as ever."
He thumped his chest and grinned at her, and she returned the smile for all that it felt false. She'd learned much of bodies, tending the detraxers, and before that, caring for the elderly and infected in the Nautilus. When several people all showed similar signs of some new malady, it was never a good omen. But Torben was right. There was nothing to be done but keep walking. Whatever this illness was, she'd never heard of it, and had no curatives in her pack or in her memory. All she could do was make sure everyone took extra salve and liniment, and that it would continue to provide some sort of protection. Siv and Torben jogged to catch up with the others, climbing up the slight hill of a dune. Every time they clambered up out of a low spot, she grew excited for the sight of whatever lay over the ridge. Even if what she saw generally brought only trouble, from the skin wolves to the Aratu to the fence and the dead lands beyond, she still felt a swell of optimism. This time, finally, her hopes were answered. They topped the dune when the sun was high and looked down on two things: utter devastation and the remains of a ship. 27. On Parnassus, 10 years ago.
"There it is,"
Brendel said, sounding cheerful for the first time in Siv's memory.
"It appears untouched,"
Phasma added, looking through her quadnox.
"If someone else had reached it first, it would be stripped to nothing."
From what Siv could see of the ship, it was the size of a building and covered in the shiniest metal she'd ever seen, bright enough to rival the beetles that had covered Chirk. But the ship was silver rather than gold, and the sun gleamed off it so fiercely that she had to shield her eyes with her hands. Hope swelled in her heart, and she could barely contain her excitement. For all that she'd let herself believe in Brendel's promised future, she had never fully trusted the man or his story of the First Order's might and generosity. The wrecked ship was just in front of a structure she recognized all too well, another Khonstar Mining Corporation station. It had been utterly destroyed, as had all the outbuildings around it. Twisted chunks of metal and broken poles poked up through the sand, and two great cylinders the size of the station itself towered behind it, dead gray against the flat blue sky.
"That's what happened,"
Brendel said, almost to himself. Then louder,
"It was a nuclear accident. Someone must have cut corners on building materials or made another stupid error. The galaxy should be beyond this sort of tragedy. Under the First Order, a company could not simply devastate a planet and abandon it. Who knows how many lives were lost here?"
He shook his head and spit into the sand, and for once, Siv didn't blame him. If wasting a tiny glob of moisture was blasphemy, then killing millions of people was even more so.
"So, the sickness," Siv began.
Brendel looked at her, his earlier cheer gone.
"Yes, we'll feel it soon. Radiation poisoning. The redness, the boils, then weakness. It will get worse. The faster we get to my ship and call the First Order, the faster they'll get us off this dead rock and pumped full of the antidote."
"Which is?"
He waved his hand dismissively.
"Chelation. Antioxidants, drugs, not my field. This is why we have med droids. The point is that the more time we spend standing here talking about it, the lower our chances of surviving long enough to be cured."
Phasma took off running, and even Brendel found his speed in her wake. They surged down the other side of the dune and into the crater below, slipping and sliding in the sand, falling and getting back up to run again. A throbbing ache began behind Siv's eyes, and for just a moment she saw double and almost swooned. But then Torben had her arm, and she was up and running again. Even the Skyr warriors were winded by the time they reached the ship, close enough to see the angles of the smooth craft and the cracked plates of metal strewn around it and damaged by the impact. Brendel was breathing so hard that he couldn't speak. He waved his arm at his troopers, and they attempted to climb up onto the metal, their boots sliding on the chrome.
Siv didn't know that word, chrome, but I do.
I'm sure you recall that craft, having ridden in it yourself a few times in your day. It was once Palpatine's favorite yacht on Naboo, and I don't know how Brendel got his hands on it, but he loved it. And then it disappeared from the records. Perhaps you remember when you stopped seeing it. Maybe Brendel told you he'd sold it or that it had been retired. He probably didn't want to admit that he'd crashed it and abandoned it. It was no easy task breaking into a damaged ship of that size without the right equipment, and the troopers were making a poor job of it.
Leave this to us,
Phasma said, and she nodded at Siv and Torben. Pleased to have real work to do, they pulled their Skyr gear out of their bags. Claw boots and gloves and rappelling lines and grappling hooks crafted from detritus and rusty mining equipment. In the Skyr, such things were necessary every day, but the climbing rigs had been useless ever since they'd rappelled down the mountain and landed in endless sand. For just a moment, having ascended her line to stand high on the silver wing of the ship, Siv was flooded with pure joy and accomplishment, forgetting all that had befallen her family in the last week. When she looked through the broken transparasteel of the cockpit, however, her happiness fled. Two dead humans sat within, strapped into their chairs in black helmets, beetles fighting to lap up the dried blood discoloring their black clothes. As Phasma turned to drop a rappelling line to the troopers to help haul Brendel up into the cockpit, she froze. Siv followed her gaze and felt her heart stutter. It was Keldo. And all the Skyr, and all the claws, already over the dune and rushing forward, weapons ready.
Pull me up, Brendel shouted. Hurry!
Whatever he said next was lost in a volley of blaster bolts from the troopers and the mad cacophony of war cries. At least 50 people were headed directly for the wreck, and Siv and Torben ducked as more blaster fire flickered off the ship around them. Keldo's people must have found Gosta's blasters and the spare blasters left behind in the gavs. Siv had never been on the receiving end of blaster fire, and it was disorienting. The shiny metal deflected the bolts, but that just meant there were two ways to get shot, from the initial fire and from the ricochets bouncing back in random directions. Phasma struggled to single-handedly pull Brendel up onto the ship, but then the line flapped in her gloved fingers, shot by a lucky blast. Brendel fell more than a meter and landed badly, crying out and flailing on his back as his troopers knelt in front of him, returning fire at the approaching attackers.
We must get to the ground and defend Brendel,
Phasma said.
He's not one of us,
Torben shouted, neatly conveying what Siv had struggled so long to communicate.
But he's the only one capable of bringing the First Order to help. If we don't save him and get him up here to make the call, we die here.
Siv saw and hated the truth of it, and she knew her only chance was to follow Phasma's orders. When Phasma jumped backward off the ship to rappel to the ground, Siv followed, and Torben was right behind them. They landed in a cloud of sand, Siv's hands stinging from the rope's friction, even through her gloves.
Protect Brendel at all costs,
Phasma said, speaking to them and to the troopers who were already doing so. Phasma pried a rectangle of metal out of the sand and flipped the broken ship plating up as a shield to face the attackers, and Torben followed suit. Siv gladly joined him behind the makeshift barricade as the troopers did the same, sheltering Brendel between them behind their panel. With each blaster hit, the metal rang and shook, and Siv used both arms to push sand behind it and help Torben hold it up. Whenever she sensed a break in the shooting, Siv peeked around her edge and shot back. The sudden rush of triumph she felt each time one of her blaster bolts found home was immediately swallowed down by sadness as her brain registered who she'd just felled. These people had been there all her life, helping her toddle about the Nautilus and teaching her how to make strong boots and pushing her to be fearless as she learned to leap between rock spires. Now she was ending them with the single pull of a trigger, not even in a valiant and worthy fight. Most of them were armed with only axes and knives, the rough weapons of the Skyr, and still they kept running toward her, screaming as if they had a chance. One by one, she picked them off and watched them fall. Despite their diminishing numbers and the ongoing blaster fire tearing them apart, Keldo and his people continued their attack. Someone had attached a piece of metal to the front of Keldo's sled, and he was ducked down behind it, avoiding the fire just as Siv's side was, which made Siv feel both